Good afternoon. I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order, and we have five bills today, so we're going to get started. Representative Simonson is going to chair the Tax Committee today.
Okay, members, we still do not have a quorum, so we can't take any action yet, but in terms of our agenda, first item on our agenda, House File 118, Representative McNamara, is he in the room? Welcome, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Simonson. Chairman, I'm Representative Jay McNamara from District 12A. I come to you today to present a bill that will remove the sales tax on purchases for the Armor radio system. I'm a retired volunteer fireman, former mayor, and active EMT. For years, I've used a radio system that I felt was adequate for our rural area. The federal government made it mandatory to implement and update radio systems by January 1st, 2013. I was disappointed as a mayor being forced to spend money to implement the new system. Since then, I've seen firsthand how well the new system works. The reason I proposed this bill was that the system was mandated to us, and secondly, it's a matter of public safety. By eliminating the sales tax on purchases, it will allow our EMS system and municipalities to purchase and upgrade more equipment and save our local government's money. 25 counties already have the sales tax exclusion, and by passing this bill, it will allow the rest of the counties in the state using the Armor radio system the same opportunities. Mr. Chairman, I have brought the head of our radio board from Grant County here to speak towards it. Would you like to hear?
Thank you, Representative McNamara. I do see that we do have a quorum now, so before we get too far, can somebody on the committee move Representative McNamara's bill?
So moved.
Thank you. Representative, if you've got a proponent to the bill, you can bring him down. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While he's coming up, can I ask, Mr. Chair, the representative to tell us how to pronounce your name. You know, I have a very difficult name. And we have Representative McNamara, and I've heard your name as both Mick and Mac, and is it Namer? Or can you tell us how to pronounce your name correctly?
You know, sometimes I pronounce it wrong. It's McNamer.
McNamer. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Chair. Representative Davids.
And I thank Chair Lincheski for that clarification, and also, if you're referring to our crack staff here, it's Joel Michael. Please, not Michaels.
Yes.
Thank you.
Point. My apologies, Representative, for misstating your name.
All right.
So, testifier, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Troy Langley. I am the Chief Deputy for the Grant County Sheriff's Office and also the System Administrator for Grant County with their radio system. I also sit on the Central Minnesota Regional Advisory Committee as well as the Owners and Operators Committee. As Representative Mr. McNamer indicated, there are 25 counties in the state of Minnesota currently who have this sales tax exemption on any of their Armor radio purchases. And truly, what we are asking today is for equality throughout the state of Minnesota, and we would ask that you would please consider this bill so the rest of Minnesota could have the same sales tax exemption on radio equipment.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative, I've got on my list here another proponent, Gary Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is not Gary Carlson, but it's equally easy. Ann Finn with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I just want to offer the support of the League for this initiative. We recognize that the public safety radio communications are an important component to public safety statewide, and our city officials would very much appreciate this tax exemption.
Thank you, Ms. Finn. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Finn, you know, as I understand it, why we need to extend the exemption is because not all communities stepped up when it was first enacted in terms of stepping, you know, going to the armor system. And is it your expectation that with this extension we'll finally get all of Minnesota covered, you know, by the kind of integrated radio system that's high tech and will work for everyone?
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, that would be my hope, but still there are probably some financial considerations for some communities coming on board, and I think they're hoping to be compliant and participating in the near future, but there still may be some phasing in.
Mr. Chair, could I just follow up? I just would really hope that the message would go out that we really do feel like Minnesotans travel. And no matter where you have a car accident or a breakdown or a medical emergency, you really do want to have, you know, the kind of best communication system to get someone to the scene. And, you know, whatever we can do to incent people to do that, and I think this is an incentive, but to not feel like, oh, well, let's just keep putting this down the line, because I really feel like the public's health is really supported by these kind of efforts.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I have one more who'd like to testify.
Very well. Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record, please.
My name is Bill Mund. I am the fire chief for the city of St. Cloud and the vice president of the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs, and I also serve as the vice chair of the statewide radio board. The bill before you is really about allowing everyone in Minnesota, public safety personnel, to share in the tax-exempt status of this equipment and these purchases. When you get to greater Minnesota, especially on the fire department side, we're dealing with mostly rural, volunteer, and small cities, that these are expensive purchases. A typical portable radio is $2,500, and you're asking a fire department with maybe an annual budget of $50,000 to now pay sales tax on that. We haven't done that for in the metro when it was built out. As it was building out to phase three, my city, for example, built out prior to Stearns and those four counties in central Minnesota being granted the exemption, so my city paid the sales tax. As this system goes on and on, and I think part of the history of this exemption was nobody really knew that this system was going to be as successful as it has proven to be, and would it eventually be built out in the state. That question has been answered. It is being built out statewide. More and more counties are coming on. I believe the last count at our statewide radio board was 56 or 58 counties are now operating on the armor systems or have plans to very shortly turn on the armor system, with more counties doing participation plans all the time. This sales tax exemption will just bring equity and fairness to all players across Minnesota on these very important purchases. This system has proved from the bridge collapse of an I-35 to the more recent Verso paper mill fire in Sartell, Minnesota, how valuable it is to the first responders, the fire and police, where we can all communicate together to work a disaster or a tragedy in our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairman Simonson, I have one more testifier.
Sure. Welcome.
Well, thank you. My name is Dan Hartog, Kandrea County Sheriff. And I would just like to echo, too, with what Chief Munson, but I am a past president of the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, also a member of the State Radio Board, and a member of our regional advisory committee. And right now there's 67 counties that are on armor, and there's 80 that are committed to going to armor. And I think this is a very important bill to exempt the sales tax to help those other counties purchase the equipment they need, the additional equipment. And also, as the system ages, we've been on it since 2009. As the system ages, we're going to have to replace that equipment. And the sales tax piece, where if we could eliminate paying that, would go a long way in purchasing more equipment. In our region alone, since 2004, we spent over $1 million in sales tax for the equipment. So I think this would be a very important bill that way.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, for my benefit, could you describe what the equipment actually is? When a county decides they're going to expand, what's involved?
We're looking at the consoles, the type of consoles that we have. What we're going from is a VH system to a 800 megahertz system, radio system. So you have to change out the equipment that you have in your dispatch centers, the equipment that you have on towers. The state did build out some towers. In our case, we actually put in equipment on another tower to supplement what the state had put in, and also then the radios, the portable radios that all the officers, firemen, EMS, county highway, utilities. It's just not a law enforcement fire system. It's for EMS, like I said, the utilities. Everybody that's working in a public service can use this system, and the communication between the different agencies is vastly improved that way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing none. Is there anybody in the audience that would wish to testify to this bill? Hearing and seeing none, I think we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion to an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative McNamer. Members, since we do have a quorum here, could I entertain a motion to accept the minutes from February 12th?
So moved.
We have a motion. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. House File 428, Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 428 is very similar to the bill you just heard, with one exception, and that it's a little bit better.
Aye.
I believe there is an amendment in your packets. The A1 amendment, I would like to move that so the bill is in the shape that I would like it to be.
Representative Anzell, do you want to first move your bill?
I would move the A1 amendment.
Can you first move your bill and then we can move the amendment?
I move House File 428. Included for possible inclusion.
Thank you. And to your amendment.
This amendment provides a little clarity to what we're actually doing here. It would eliminate from the exemption the 9/11 call centers, thereby confining the impact of this somewhat. The parties that are agreeing to this legislation have been in agreement that that should be done, so I'd respectfully ask for your approval of that amendment.
Members, any discussions on the amendment? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With me here is Mr. Marcus Bruning from St. Louis County. With full transparency and disclosure, I want you all to know that I am a former St. Louis County Commissioner, and St. Louis County will be a beneficiary of this legislation should it be enacted. I initially became aware of this problem where we weren't treating all of the state's counties in the same fashion. When in 07, one of the counties that I represent, Itasca County, was successful in getting themselves added to the exemption. While, of course, I supported them being added to the exemption, I raised the issue of why wasn't this a statewide exemption? And frankly, that's why we're here today. And I mentioned in jest that this bill is slightly better and slightly more expansive than the previous bill, and the reason for that is that it's retroactive to April 30 of 05, when all 87 counties were impacted by the FCC requirement. With that, I would ask Mr. Bruning to add any additional comments from St. Louis County's perspective or add anything that I may have missed in presenting this bill to you.
Welcome, Mr. Bruning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity. As you know, as the representative mentioned, this all came down from an FCC mandate. And the mandate was that we had to make some changes to our radio systems, and the state in phase one and phase two came up with this plan that covered the majority of the metro that was the system called Armor that moved to an 800 megahertz system. And we had a decision to make. There was a deadline that was put in place by the FCC, and that deadline was December 31st of 2012, with substantial fines of $5,000 per day if we didn't take some sort of an action. So certainly we had some decisions to make and how we were going to proceed, and we were well on our way to going to a VHF digital system, which would have created an island, essentially, where we would not have been able to interop with other agencies around us, particularly state agencies, federal agencies, and our other partners around St. Louis County. In 2008, we had a meeting where the Department of Public Safety came to a meeting at Bluefin Bay up on Lake Superior and asked each of 11 counties from the northeast region of Minnesota, what is your intention, what is your plan in order to meet this mandate for the narrowbanding system? And Itasca County, as the representative had mentioned, had already committed to going to Armor in 2008, which left 11 counties, and 10 of those counties said, we're waiting to see what St. Louis County is going to do. So we had a very big decision to make within St. Louis County, and the region certainly saw us as a leader, but the region also saw that we had some very unique challenges in St. Louis County. Our biggest challenge is geography. We're a 6,800 square mile county. We're larger than four states in the United States. If you take the state of Minnesota map, and our county starts just south of Duluth, and if you flip that on the map, state of Minnesota, it would cover the Minneapolis airport to give you some idea of how big our community is. Now, we have an international seaport, and we have an international border that we're contending with, and obviously creates huge communication challenges within our organizations. For us to go forward with the VHF narrowband plan was a $4.6 million project. For us to go with Armor to move to 800 was an $8.5 million project. And we were lobbied heavily by the Department of Public Safety to try to move to Armor, to bring our partners with, to be a leader, and pressured very hard to move toward Armor. And they showed us some interoperability advantages, and they showed us some other advantages where we determined that that was a prudent decision. But we made that prudent long-term decision believing that we would receive a sales tax exemption, because phase one and phase two had already received that sales tax exemption. And at that time, it was 19 counties that had been involved in that county. Our build-out was considered to be phase 3, 4, and 5, and was to be completed and just barely made the deadline of December 31st of 2012. So our decision included public safety agencies, and our public safety agencies are served by 37 tower sites on this Armor system. And you should also know that we have 185 police, fire, and EMS jurisdictions in St. Louis County. And all of them, we needed to bring them along with us in our venture to move to the Armor system. As the fire chief mentioned earlier in the previous bill, some of these fire departments have bake sales to put fuel in their trucks. And for them to be able to buy thousands of dollars worth of equipment wasn't a possibility. So the St. Louis County Board, the St. Louis County Sheriff, agreed to move all 185 of these agencies to Armor, and we bought their end-user equipment, again, being an $8.5 million project. As a result of us moving forward in St. Louis County, nine other northeast counties followed us, and met that 2012 deadline, and there is one more county in the region, and the last one within the region, and that's moving to Armour later on this year, which brings us to today. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yet still 19 counties in the state of Minnesota have a sales tax exemption for their Armour equipment. And we've been trying to expand the exemption for 4 years by coming to the legislature. And since the Phase 1 and Phase 2 19-county exemption, 50 additional counties have signed on to Armour. And 50 additional counties have had to pay sales tax in their purchases, creating a tremendous inequity in our eyes and in the eyes of our constituents and the people that we serve. All it is that I'm asking for is to have the same consideration, to have that sales tax exemption that was given to the Metro, that was given to St. Cloud, that was given to Rochester, that was given to the Central Region. And again, all we're asking for that is to be the same. And St. Louis County's $8.5 million project has resulted in $500,000 in sales tax. $500,000 in sales tax that comes from property tax dollars with your constituents and the people that we serve, taxpayer dollars. And I just don't understand why this communication solution of Armour, which is a tremendous system and has provided more safety for our police, fire, and EMS personnel than they've ever had before, it shouldn't cost the taxpayers of outstate Minnesota 6.875% more than it costs the Metro, than it costs St. Cloud, than it costs Rochester or the Central Region. Or interestingly, even within our own region, the county of Itasca has a sales tax exemption. Again, all I'm asking for is the same consideration. The previous efforts have been challenged by funding sources, and we continue to face budget challenges, certainly in and around the state, but our financial burden is universal, and I'm asking and urging you to consider universal options and to be fair. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bruning. Any questions? Representative Lynchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just whispering with Ms. Dalton about Representative Anzell's bill, and I think it's worth noting for the committee that there's a little more than Armour going on here. So, and you did say that, but I think you chose, your testifier chose Armour. So if Ms. Dalton can just tell us what's all qualified in Representative Anzell's bill.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Anzell's bill, House File 428, covers all Armour systems and non-Armour systems that meet the FCC requirements in all the remaining counties. And there are, I believe, 16 counties in northwest Minnesota that did not go with the Armour system but developed a different system.
Thank you. Representative Anzell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for your consideration here this afternoon. Two additional points very briefly. I represent two counties, Itasca and Cass. It really makes no sense for one of those two counties to be afforded the exemption and the neighboring county to not be afforded the exemption. And lastly, this is not the first time this bill has been before the legislature. I believe this is the 10th time since 09, and due to all sorts of considerations, mainly fiscal, of course, we haven't been able to do this, but I think it's time. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair?
Representative Runbeck.
If I could, Representative, just a question. So what portion, we're talking about a retroactive then, right? This is, much of this system is already in, or how much of it is yet to be purchased? I mean, it sounds like a lot of it would be for purchases made prior, many, 5-6 years ago.
Representative Anzell.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ryan Erdman. I'm the Public Safety Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. Our association is in support of this bill, and we did set that date back when it was, because that is the effective date for all other counties that were given the tax exemption. So in an effort to fully make this as fair as possible, we set the date that any purchase by a previously non-exempt county would now become exempt. Like I said, anything at that date going forward. So that was why that date was chosen for that for the retroactivity portion of the bill. Does that answer the question?
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much of it is already purchased and installed versus what is yet to be purchased?
Mr. Erdman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runback, the bulk of it, the vast majority of the cost in this bill, and I haven't seen the revenue note, is going to be in the retroactivity. There are continuing upgrades going forward and things of that nature that will be eligible. But for most of the counties, as you've heard from other testifiers, there are 60-some counties now, or 70-some counties that are already on. Many of those purchases have been made, as you mentioned, from St. Louis County. They have invested significant millions of dollars already. So that's where the bulk of the cost is in the retroactivity portion.
Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, you know, we've had a tough 4 or 5 years as a state. I mean, you get the sense listening here to a lot of different ideas and legislation that everyone feels nothing was fair, nothing, you know, nobody got what they deserved. I mean, how far are we going to take trying to go back retroactively and make everybody whole who didn't get exactly the, you know, the appropriations they wanted? I just think that at a point we go, we got to look forward, folks. I mean, what is what is, you know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative Anza. And again, we'll lay House File 428 over for possible inclusion. Representative Lincheski, question. Our next three bills, I understand, are the same, correct? And we'll start with 469, Representative Fisher. Okay. Representative Fisher. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, or good afternoon, committee. Appreciate that. Are we doing, I thought we were going to do all three at the same time, or is it, because aren't they somewhat similar?
Representative Fisher, we can only have one motion at a time.
Okay.
So we're going to start with yours, and if someone on the committee could move House File 469.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 459.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, Representative Fisher.
Okay. Also, there's an amendment that we have to add some language to make things a little bit more consistent across the board. Would it be possible to have that amendment considered at this point in time, too? It's the amendment 469A1, and there's 469A2.
Representative Lesh moves the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Representative Fisher.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to bring this forward. Basically, up until 1992, municipalities were not required to pay sales tax on their purchases. As a part of a budget balancing back in 92, they were required to pay sales tax on purchases starting that point in time, which kind of put extra burden on local governments and basically took money from local property taxes and moved them to the state. And so what I did was bringing this forward to say, let's try to make it more comprehensive, where as you're looking at the tax overhaul, is let's move the burden off the local government agency, because you're basically robbing for Peter to pay Paul, and take a look if the state has a budget issues, taking advantage of it at the upper level instead of forcing our problems down to the local level at these issues. And I do have a couple testifiers, and I know that some of my testifiers were also going to be on the speaking with one of the other bills, so I don't know if you want to have the testifiers all at this one point in time, or how would you like to spread that out?
Thank you, Representative Fisher. We also have an A2 amendment, as I understand. So if somebody could move the A2.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Ms. Dalton is just feeling so bad over here, so maybe she wants to tell us about the A2 that Representative Garofalo was also asking about.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am very sorry. I'm going to blame cold medication on for this. The A2 amendment was actually not drafted for Representative Fisher's bill. It was supposed to be drafted for Representative Anderson's bill. He came to me with this issue late yesterday, and I accidentally drafted it to the wrong bill. It will work on Representative Anderson's bill, and I think Representative Anderson, it should be moved when Representative Anderson's bill is brought forward.
Outrageous.
she's and I do apologize.
Get out of here.
I want some of that medication.
So the NyQuil amendment goes on what?
Thank you, Ms. Dalton,
Mr.
for that.
Mr. Chair, the NyQuil amendment goes on Representative Anderson's
side. Representative Fisher, I think because these are all three the same, what I'd like to do is hear from all three authors, and then we'll move into testifiers.
Okay. Sounds very good. Thank you.
Representative Zerwas. And before you get started, members, we'll lay over House File 469 for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 295 for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at,
too, doesn't it?
Looking at the possible expansion of sales tax into services as proposed by the governor as part of his budget, I had several cities and counties contact me about what the impact of that would be, and in speaking with the league, this issue has been ongoing for quite a while. The sales tax exemption as a whole, and in my 6 years on the Elk River City Council, I've seen firsthand the pressures that paying for sales tax, particularly on large projects, place on local units of government as far as property tax. And so I look at this as an opportunity to kind of reset how we approach this and provide some sustainable structural potential property tax relief. And I won't repeat a lot of what Representative Fisher said or what Representative Anderson, I think, will testify to, but I'll reserve more time for the individuals from the different communities here to testify.
Very good. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Zerwas, did you want me to move the A1 amendment for you?
Oh, you're such a gentleman.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A1 amendment.
Is there any discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Seeing no other questions, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lanchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Zerwas, if I'm saying it correctly, who we scheduled his bill, and he came, and we had not met, and he came over on the floor and told me that Representative Fisher had the same bill, so that was really nice. And then we saw Ms. Jensen caught Representative Anderson's after that, but I appreciate that show of bipartisanship right out of the chute to bring that to my attention.
Let's
so
get
thank
them all
you.
Done at once.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Oh, I am. I am.
We have a motion to move House File 466.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Groffel, do you have a question?
No.
Thank you.
Do you have an amendment?
Welcome, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have the infamous, now infamous, either Geritol or NyQuil amendment, one of the two. It'll be the A2. That was my suggestion to do this, so it represents me. It was brought to me by the Association of Counties, and they would like to have had that added to the bill. House File 466 is the number of my bill.
Mr. Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my understanding is the NyQuil amendment then is relabeled as the 466A1 amendment. I would move that at this time.
Very good. Is there any discussion on that? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would just add also that this little old bill here just adds a couple of words to the current statute allows cities and counties the same exemptions that the 2011 legislature allowed to townships in Minnesota. And the governor has talked about revamping our tax system, things like that. And this is a major item. The fiscal note, it's about $130, $140 million a year in tax relief that would go to our local governments. And we've talked about more LGA, things like that. And to me, this would be a very straightforward way to allow those units to have pretty immediate tax relief if we would grant them this exemption status. And I called a couple of my local units And these thousands of dollars, pretty soon they add up to real money. And one area they're also very concerned about, if the expansion of sales tax were to become law and the base is broadened, a lot of our local units contract out for things such as engineering, for auditing, things like that, some legal fees as well. In one of my little towns, or not little towns, Melrose, about 3,500 people. Last year, they spent about $337,000 in professional fees alone. And were that to be taxed at the 5.5% rate, which is what is proposed, that would add an additional $18,500 to their sales tax bill for the year. So that's a concern that going forward, that if the base is expanded, it would really impact some of our smaller units, because of that they contract out to get services for things that I mentioned. We have also some testifiers. The Association of Minnesota Counties would like to say a few words, and also, I believe, the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you. One moment, please. Okay, we're good. First testifier. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, I should say that I can pronounce Anzels and I can pronounce McNamar. So with that, my name is Joe Venny, and I am a Beltrami County Commissioner and President of the Association of Minnesota Counties. I know well Representative Anderson as a former County Commissioner. I also know that Horace Greeley said, "Go west, young man." So I migrated from St. Louis County to Beltrami County. That's as far west as we got. That said, on behalf of Minnesota's 87 counties, I'd like to testify in support of the bills before you today that would provide a sales tax exemption to cities and counties in Minnesota, and offer our great thanks to Representatives Zerwas, Anderson, and Fisher for championing this important legislation. AMC believes strongly that local governments should be exempt from sales tax, from state sales tax. Under our current tax system, cities and counties funnel locally raised property tax dollars to pay state sales tax when purchasing equipment, office supplies, construction materials, and many other products. This sales tax shell game drives property taxes artificially higher and reduces transparency in the state's tax system. Those of you who have previously served in the legislature know that this is not a new issue. Cities, counties, and townships spent the past 20 years trying to regain the tax exemption which was lost in the early 1990s. We were pleased that the legislature recognized the importance of exempting local government purchases from sales taxes last biennium, when you chose to once again provide an exemption to township government. We hope that this year, a year of such promise for reform and fixing long-standing problems within the state's budget, you will choose to provide the same relief for city and county taxpayers. As I said, this is certainly not a new issue, but it is an issue that I believe is particularly important this session. And I believe this for two reasons. First, Governor Dayton has begun a very important discussion about tax reform in our state, and I know this committee is interested in helping shape real, lasting tax reform this session. By any measure, exempting local governments from sales tax is real tax reform. It streamlines the tax system by eliminating a major shift of local tax revenues to the state's general fund, while also making tax and spending decisions more transparent and accountable. It also has the additional benefit of reducing the pressure on property tax levies, which I know is a goal shared by both the governor and the legislature. Second, as part of the governor's tax reform plan, the governor has proposed reducing the state's sales tax rate by broadening the sales tax base to include certain services and previously untaxed products. This change, if enacted by the legislature, would have a major impact on local governments, which utilize many of these services that would now be taxable under the governor's plan, unless the legislature chooses to exempt cities and counties from these taxes. At AMC, we have been reaching out to counties to try to determine the net impact of these changes. Let me share with you what we've discovered in my home county, or my transplanted home county, Beltrami County, as we've looked at the governor's plan. In 2012, Beltrami County paid about $335,000 in state sales tax. By our staff's best estimate, and remember that this is a very preliminary estimate based only on the public information we currently have, we think we could see our sales tax liability double under a sales tax reform plan that lowered the tax rate while extending the tax to services the county currently purchases. To put that figure in perspective, the governor's plan to restore $40 million to county program aid would provide an estimated $569,000 to Beltrami County. Taken together, our rough estimate suggests roughly two-thirds of Beltrami County's new program aid funding would go right back to the state in the form of new sales tax and would not be used to reduce property tax levies, as I believe is the intent. Given what we've seen from other counties at this point, I think this example is fairly representative of what you'll find in other counties across the state. Once again, AMC strongly urges you to reestablish the sales tax exemption for cities and counties as you work this session to craft a better tax system for Minnesota. We are deeply grateful to the governor, to the legislature, to this committee for beginning this conversation, and are eager to work with you as policymakers to continue shaping this reform effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass. I'll have a few questions for Mr. Carlson when he's here.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Venny?
Yes, sir.
Venny. I just want to make sure I got that right. Thank you, Commissioner Venny. I don't recall seeing you down here during the discussion about local aids and credits that we cut substantially over the last 10 years. Were you down here previously for that?
I was not. Not for that particular matter.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Venny and Mr. Chair. Because what really stood out in my mind at the beginning of your comments is you call this a big shell game. And to a certain extent it is. Do you want us to cut your local aids and credits and then exempt you on the sales taxes, or do you want it the other way around? I mean, this money does get moved around a lot, and I appreciate your comments about the governor's proposal and the governor's budget, but at the end of the day, your county was hurt when we cut local aids and credits, and so were your homeowners in those areas. So I just wanted to point that out to you, that I think your use of the phrase shell game is to a certain extent appropriate, because we took a lot of money from your county in previous years, and your property taxpayers are feeling the hit.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. And just to be clear, I think when we're done hearing testifiers, we'll bring all three authors back to the table and we can ask questions to them. So if questions should be directed to the testifiers. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Venny, since in the introduction to what has become known as the NyQuil Amendment, which it also includes the request came from the Association of Counties, and this amendment, which we adopted, says any joint powers board where at least half of the members consist of cities, counties, and towns. And I would like to know who the other half would be of a joint powers board that we would be extending the sales tax exemption to, and you know, is this creating a loophole for other partnerships? I know our local governments are really creative, but I'm just not sure Who else would be coming in under this particular provision?
Commissioner?
And Mr. Chair, Madam, I don't have a ready answer to that.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the joint powers law allows joint powers agreements with the state, which is taxable, with certain hospitals, nonprofit hospitals, and with rehabilitation and employment centers and agencies that are certified by the state, as well as special taxing districts, which would remain taxable under this legislation. So there are some taxable entities that are part of joint powers that still are out there. And so at the behest of Representative Anderson, he basically wanted to make sure that if, like, there were joint powers between two cities or two cities and counties, but then we got into the, well, what happens if you have two counties and a special taxing district? So as long as at least half of the districts are in this tax exempt, then the joint powers would be exempt.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Dalton for that. I think as we further consider this, we really need to think about how that works, because that means that some special taxing districts that are in a joint powers agreement could use this to get the tax exemption, and others that don't happen to have that kind of structure wouldn't. And I think whatever we do, we need to make sure that there's some equity on how we handle these things. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, next testifier, please. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Good Keith point. Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and we also appear here in support of the principles that are covered in the Anderson, Fisher, and Zerwas bill. I do want to start, I believe, a handout that I have that's titled Sales Tax on Local Governments has been distributed to the committee. I just want to mention, well, again, we support the principle of eliminating the sales tax. Our first priority is bringing stability to the state's budget. And in our formal legislative recommendations, we have identified components of bringing that stability, in sizable increase in the state's reserve and expansion in the sales tax. So want to be on record that we also support aspects of the governor's budget. So I don't reiterate some of the points that have already been covered by Commissioner Venny. Our primary issue, frankly, is with the effect of the taxation of counties and other local governments when you expand the sales tax to what you will be hearing a number of times over the next several weeks over business-to-business services. And the same issues exist for us, except it's business-to-government. Ultimately, the taxes that would be paid by us on the taxation of professional services will pyramid and show up as increased property taxes. And equally important, it's going to result in neglect and needed investments in infrastructure and IT, and somewhat frustrate the efforts that we might over the past number of years to more efficiently deliver services in both the IT area and the money management area. To give you a little further background on how this extension to professional services affects counties, St. Louis County has estimated the tab on just the professional services would be from $565,000 to $815,000 annually based on their historic expenditures. Up to $86,000 of that would specifically be on services relating to infrastructure of architectural and engineering services. Stearns County is estimated to be $1.3 million, and Dakota County, it's not highlighted on the document here, has estimated would be over $900 million, On a net basis, after netting out the reduction to 5.5%, they would still see an increase of $760,000 or an 86%. Now, going on to the specific issues that I've highlighted is, just like businesses, counties are investing heavily in automating currently manual functions and upgrading existing computer systems. Investing in enterprise systems like Oracle or PeopleSoft can cost in excess of $1 million, and the lion's share of that expenditure is not for the software. It's for the consulting services that basically allow the installation, allow the integration. Even the consulting services that we would receive from our own joint powers entity, the Minnesota Counties Computer Consortium or Cooperative, would be subject to tax. And so this is, again, a concern that is undoing the efficiencies that we've tried to create in the past. Extension of the sales tax to portfolio management and bank charges would also be costly. Obviously, this affects the costs that we incur for checking accounts. Like businesses, our checking accounts aren't free. We pay a substantial money. And we also pay services for portfolio management of our intermediate terms investment. Again, we've created a cooperative entity called MAGIC. This time it stands for Minnesota Association of Governments Investing in Counties. It just happens to be the same acronym as the legislation that's being pushed the same past years. And those services would be taxable to us. Final question for us is, would the services of financial advisors and bond counsels that assist us in issuing bonds also be subject? If so, that would further undo our efforts to invest in needed infrastructure. Final issue that I'll relate to, and this kind of goes to the joint powers issue that was mentioned before, is that counties in their fiduciary capacities to sub-entities or independent entities frequently provide centralized services such as payroll, benefits administration, or other accounting services. To the extent we provide those to those sub-entities, which could be a historical society, a fair board, an HRA, a community development agency, again, those would be taxable. I guess the final question that that raises, I'll mention one more. We also participate in what are called water management organizations. Again, a function that, you know, is the potential unwitting recipient of tax increases under that portion of the governor's proposal. I guess the final question that I'll raise, does the state really want to encourage bringing these services in-house? Because exactly as business will tell you, if we in-house these services, we will avoid the tax. But that's not necessarily the most efficient a way of in paying for these services or providing these services. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer questions.
Members, we do have seven additional testifiers, so I know the folks we've got on the list, but if it's possible that your question could wait till the end, that would be great, but I will definitely call you. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be supporting, just to be clear, the Zerwas bills and the McNamer bill. After listening to Representative Anderson on the floor describe having a snowstorm with a mile-long driveway and having his wife bring the shovel, I thought that... did you shovel or did she?
I shoveled.
Oh, that okay. I can support this one too then. Okay, and to the Lesh point, over the last 10 years there have been some pretty big cuts because of budgets that were strained. I'm just very happy that in the 2011 tax bill we did not cut any county program aid or local government aid from the previous year. But Representative Lesh is absolutely correct. Mr. Carlson, there are so many moving parts on this because we have these bills as presented here, not knowing what we're going to be looking at with the governor's proposals because that changes everything here. And I might need the Department of Revenue on this, but maybe Mr. Carlson, what would we're not showing on any of the revenue estimates here. anything about any interaction. The Anderson bill, Zero S bill, McNamer bill, are basically $231.8 million increase in local government aid for 14-15, but I don't see any interaction on reduction of property taxes or, you know, when you look at the city or county here, how that's affected there. How do you see that interplaying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, the benefit would flow through to our taxpayers. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that everybody is going to reduce their property taxes below current levels, but it certainly will slow the increases that otherwise would occur. Counties in particular have been very frugal over the past 3 years and shown that basically up has historic lows in our increases. Many counties have actually had zero or reductions, but I'm not going to again sit here and say that it's actually going to result in no levy increase, if that's what we're looking for.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this goes back to 1991, when then Representative Earhart, Runbeck, and Davids faced a budget shortfall, and if I remember correctly, Governor Carlson was coming in saying we're going to cut county program aid and local government aid, and you said, no, don't do that. Please put a sales tax on our purchases, if I remember correctly, with a gun to your head, a political gun. Geez, you can't see that, can you? But you were in a difficult situation, we will say. So the compromise back in 91, which was my first year, and I believe Earhart and Runbeck, was to put a sales tax on purchases. Now, it was described once in a meeting I was at by then-Senator Duane Benson that if a Martian came down to the Earth and saw that governments were taxing governments, they'd go right back to Mars, because that really doesn't make any sense. But that's a little history on why that was established that way. Now, I worked very hard, and other members around this table worked very hard over the past years to start nibbling away at that, because it doesn't make sense. It was put in to get the budget deal done with Senator Moe, Majority Leader Moe, and Speaker Banasik and Governor Carlson. That's what happened. But it doesn't make a lot of sense what we did. So I've been carried bills and been successful on not taxing ambulance purchases, not taxing this. We did the township. Townships don't have to pay. We did that last year. We're nibbling around the edges. But as you can see, there's quite a note here as to what this costs. So we've been whittling away at it, and I like all of these bills, but it'll be the job of this committee and Chair Lincheski to try and put this thing together with all the various moving parts, because if you do tax the legal services and if you tax the CPA services and advertising and all those types of things that you'd be paying sales tax on, that changes everything that we're doing here. So I agree with the previous witness, the county commissioner, saying that this is a starting point to have this debate, but I just want to provide a little bit of history of where this came from. And I've been very clear in my campaign literature that it's the cities and counties begged us for this, which they, of course, did, with the alternative not being real good either. So, but I want to work with the counties and the cities to see what we can do to lessen some of this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Earhart, a short question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious about page 2, your first bullet point. That seems to be cross-purposes about going there.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Carlson.
Representative Earhart, the full extent of the governor's budget proposal is more than just extending the sales tax to services. It's increasing the sales tax on, the excise tax on cigarettes. It's increasing the individual income tax on certain income brackets. And the sales tax itself is more than just taxing professional services. It's also taxing now exempt goods and personal services. The rest of the aspects of the governor's proposal we would gladly support if, again, it brings stability to the state's finances, and we won't be subject to, as we have year after year, cuts in our aid payments, particularly in the retroactive aspects that's all too frequently has happened.
Thank you. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, we are going to have testimony on the governor's bill, but that's not what these bills are about. These three bills have nothing to do with the governor's proposal. So I hope members will listen to Representative Fisher and Representative Anderson and Representative Zerwas's bills, which are not the governor's proposal. And so, you know, if we can get back on the bill, I did just want to comment that we have two authors who both are supposed to be in another committee right now, and they're waiting patiently for questions, and they have sent messages out to that chair to come and get them when they're voting. But there will be a day that we can talk about the governor's proposal, but none of these bills have anything to do with the governor's proposal. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, to Chair Lincheski's point, there are some very serious interactions with what's being proposed out there as to what's being proposed here. I agree. These bills are not the governor's bill, but I'm just trying to think through, if we do this, how does it affect this? And that's what the debate will be.
And Mr. Chair. And I agree with that, Representative Davids. What I'm saying is I wouldn't want to leave the impression that Representative Zerwas or Representative Anderson or Representative Fisher are carrying the governor's proposal here, which is what we're now talking about. So I think they're carrying a sales tax exemption for local cities and counties, and we're going to have that broader debate. But these three authors, I think, are showing a very bipartisan effort about the problem that, quite frankly, bipartisanly, both the Democrats in the past and the Republicans in the past have not solved this problem. We can look back year after year after year, and it doesn't matter who's in charge, nobody fixes it. So there's plenty of blame to go around with the problem that these three authors are bringing forward. So I just don't want folks to think Representative Anderson is the keynote carrier of the governor's proposal here. So
I was thinking more about the shovel.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next testifier, please. Representative Groffel.
Yeah, thank you. And Mr. Carlson, actually, I had a question for you. I'm sorry, there was a misunderstanding. And I just want to thank Chair Lincheski for scheduling these hearings on the governor's sales tax proposal.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carlson, there seems to be, you know, there is a $1 billion deficit, and all kidding aside, there does seem to be a, specifically I'll ask you the question for the counties here. If this sales tax exemption were granted, counties would save, in the upcoming biennium, $91 million. And it would seem that a case could be made that in exchange for the sales tax exemption, you would accept some reduction in county aid, maybe not the full 91, but at least a number that would net out to the positive to the counties. Does Micah have a position on that, or can you speculate on whether they would be supportive of such a measure where, again, you don't get one or the other? I understand in a perfect world you'd want the exemption and additional county program aid, but in exchange for the elimination of the sales tax, you would take some modest reduction in aid.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, I happen to be going to a board meeting at 2 o'clock where we will be discussing those issues. Several of my member counties have, in fact, said they would be more than happy for that exchange, that they would give up certainly the aid increases in the governor's budget for the sales tax exemption, but our association as a whole has not taken a position on the issue at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you. Next testifier, please.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Anderson.
I need to get to a committee. I'll be right back, okay? As long as you're going to take questions from testifiers, can I go and come back?
Understood.
Okay. I don't know about that.
Welcome. Introduce yourself for the record and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Mayor Beth Bauman, City of South St. Paul, and I am here to speak in favor of this action. I'm going to give you a simple math problem because I am a marketer by trade. So here's the math in South St. Paul. We pay from $160,000 to $200,000 every year in sales tax, depending on our capital expenditures. Our tax levy increase, 1% tax levy increase for property taxes for the taxpayers equals about $85,000 to $90,000. So if we were exempted from sales tax, we could hold the line, and I'm just saying hold the line, I'm not saying decrease property tax, but hold the line on our property taxes by up to 2%. That would seriously help us. And you know, local government aid, a whole different deal, but if this, we would definitely benefit from this, and we would pass that benefit through to our property tax holder, taxpayers. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. I see no questions at this time. Next testifier, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Kelly Slavik, and I'm the mayor of Plymouth.
and I thank you for this opportunity to address the committee. You know, it's my understanding that this sales tax was instituted to solve a problem, and it was short term. And cities are still paying this tax. Townships are not. School districts are not. I feel that the state's budget issue is really put on the backs of the cities here. We continue to pay, and we're using tax. We're paying taxes with tax dollars. Does not make a lot of sense to us. And I want to tell you a little bit about Plymouth. We haven't received LGA since 2003. So if you want to cut my aid, go right ahead. We don't get any. And we have been, in Plymouth, we have been very conservative with our budget. This year we had a 1.59% tax increase. The past 3 years we did not have any levy increase at all. We've cut our workforce by more than 10%. We're a service provider. We provide the core services in our community, and this tax does hurt us. We lose, we spend about over $500,000 a year on this tax. And I brought an example of an invoice that I have just to buy a dump truck in the city of Plymouth. It's $100,000. We pay almost $7,000 in sales tax. And we have delayed improvements in our infrastructure and have not been able to make the investments in our community that are required. So I could I'm only one of seven votes on our city council, but I could probably guarantee you if we did not have to pay this sales tax, we would see a decrease in our levy. I think we're very prudent in our city without getting any local government aid, and we're a huge fiscal disparity loser. I won't go into what impact the governor's proposed tax would have on our community, but just this would cost is costing us over $500,000 a year.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, and to the Honorable Mayor and to committee members here. I just want to be clear for the record that Representative Carlson was here too, of course. In 1991, that was a temporary sales tax, just so you know, it's temporary.
Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mayor, for coming here today. It's been very helpful, the information that you've been able to provide me as the state representative from Plymouth on what this means to our community, and I applaud the work that you and the City Council have done to hold down property taxes for area residents. I know you and I have had conversations about what, and I know that Representative Lencheski, you didn't want to talk about the governor's tax plan, but this is all wrapped into it, and we're talking about over $600,000 of tax burden for the city of Plymouth if that were to come into play, in addition to this issue as well being problematic for our community. And Representative Lesh, you know, as she highlighted, we do not receive local government aid in Plymouth. So thank you for coming today and providing the input that you have from our community.
Thank you.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to Representative Anderson, I do want to talk about the governor's proposal, and I want to, you know, we'll take the time to thank him another day. What I didn't want to do is have three authors who all were in another committee spend time on the governor's proposal when they had bills on something unrelated. So, you know, we're going to have a lot of time to do that, and I think there's a lot of good things we're going to talk about as we take testimony on the governor's proposal. I will say, Madam Mayor, nice to see you. I'm a former city council member in Bloomington, and I feel your pain up there as a city who doesn't receive LGA and is the largest giver of fiscal disparities, the city of Bloomington. But I think it should be reminded in the committee that cities like Bloomington and Plymouth, you know, we are recipients of police aid, and we are recipients of fire aid, as all cities are, pension aid and municipal street aid. So there is no city in the state of Minnesota that does not receive something from the state legislature, and it's just, I think this is the committee to remind folks that we're all participants in the big system here, and we all have to be thoughtful as we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for testifying.
Thank
Next
you.
Testifier, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cal Portner. I'm the city administrator from the city of Elk River. And it is reassuring to follow Mayor Slavik. I'm a former city of Plymouth employee, and I've been here a few times with the mayor making her rounds to some of your offices. As many of you know, the city of Elk River is a city of about 24,000 people situated between Minneapolis-St. Paul and the St. Cloud metro area. And we are a regional center, so not only do we serve our own folks, we serve many other folks from the regional area that come for goods and services and retail. The impact of the sales and use taxes from the state of Minnesota on the city of Elk River is approximately $200,000, and that's about 2% of our annual general tax levy. That tax levy has remained roughly unchanged over the last 4 years. We've held our levy flat despite the economy of which we've had. And our council, and Mr. Zerwas is a former member of our council, has spent many long hours over the last 4 or 5 years wrangling over budgets, not over $200,000 numbers, but rather over $5,000 and $10,000 budget items in order to make a budget that's fiscally responsible to a community that is challenged not only by its economics, but also by the regional area. There's a couple of other things that previous testifiers haven't talked to that I'd like to bring to your attention, because the dollars are significant, but there are a number of other decisions that we make on a continual basis on how we provide services. We are continually seeking economies of scale and seeking better ways to do our work. And with the sales tax impact, the sales tax impact on our community goes beyond just the dollar amount. We pay about 1,200 different vendors each year for the goods that we purchase. And we print over 4,600 checks. We process over 450 invoices per AP check run, accounts payable check run, which goes every 2 weeks. And with that, we have a staff member that must go through every single line item to try to identify the complexities of the sales tax impact. And it's not just the items that we're looking for, it's the vendors, because we have vendors that are in Hutchinson, Minnesota, and Hutchinson, Kansas, and they all add a different tax to each invoice that we have to account for. And in fact, you know, this is kind of some of the cheat sheets that our AP staff use to try to figure out each week where we are. And that plays a role in our staffing and in our staff work and how we account for our work. When we work through each of those invoices, ensure that we not only have paid the proper taxes, but also submitted the proper use taxes at the end, we're still held accountable by audit. And in 2011, we underwent a state sales tax audit. And over a course of 6 weeks, we had representatives from the state in our offices pouring through documents. We had staff answering questions, trying to find out where we were at. When the day was done, I wish I could tell you it was bad news. Right? I'm glad I can tell you that we didn't have the bad message that we had underpaid our taxes. We actually had paid too much in taxes and had over $3,300 returned to the city. So it's bad enough that we can't figure out exactly where we're going and trying to decipher what we have to do. We can't underpay our bills, and we certainly don't want to overpay our bills with the precious resources that we have. So again, this impact on our budget would make a significant impact to our levy, because we have not adjusted our levy over the last 4 years, and from all indications, our council will continue that direction going forward. But there's also a staffing impact and a work impact. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next testifier, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Cities. Thank you for taking the opportunity to hear from some of our mayors and city folks about the impact on their local budgets. I just want to indicate that the League of Cities and Patricia Nauman's Metro Cities organizations both strongly support the bills. Organizations both strongly support the bills offered by Representatives Zerwas, Fisher, and Anderson. We've been pushing this issue for several years. We have a lot of new council members that were newly elected to the legislature that fully appreciate the effect on local budgets. And I just want to reiterate our support. One last comment. Minnesota, and Ms. Dalton can correct me on this, but Minnesota is one of the few states that has opted to tax their local units of government in the past many, many years. As I understand it, and I stand to be corrected, but I know the states of Arizona, Arkansas, California, Hawaii, Louisiana, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Washington all tax their local units of government. And I believe that all of those taxes have been in place for probably since those states imposed their sales tax. Minnesota is the only state that I know of that has relatively recently, and to solve a budget deficit, imposed the sales tax on their local units of government. We've gone through many years of ups and downs in the state budget, but we think it's really time that we re-exempt these purchases. You've heard the great reasons why. It's an administrative headache to comply with all these laws, and it actually does cost our local ratepayers and taxpayers more money. So we do strongly support the bills, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you. See no questions at this time. Next testifier. Seeing no other testifier, if we could get the authors back down, and members of the committee, if you have questions.
All right. Mr. Chair, I think Representative Anderson hasn't made it back yet.
Very well. I see no questions either, so if you want to make some closing comments to your bills, that would be fine.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Zaras. Just very quickly, I appreciate the opportunity to have the bill heard. One thing I'll kind of summarize a little bit is I represent the community of Maplewood, and the city of Maplewood's done a lot trying to save money along the lines and be creative, and they need help on the revenue side. And the reason I mention on the expense side is they've tried creative things where at one point in time they eliminated the Parks Department completely, trying to save money. They did not find that work. That did not work out very well. Very recently, they took the serious step of reducing the fire stations from 5 to 3. So we're looking at different ways of trying to address some of the issues in the revenue side, and something like this would really go a long way in helping what our community is doing and on working on being responsible and reducing services as much as possible, but being fiscally responsible. So we would appreciate the help and consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
And I would just add on to Representative Fisher's comments. In the 6 years I was on the Oak River City Council, we held our property tax levy flat from 2008 through 2012. That included a time where we lost all of our LGA, and unfortunately with the change in the housing market, laid off several employees. We found that we needed to keep Elk River as affordable as possible, and that meant not raising our property taxes as much as possible, and that's the approach our council took. This extra impact in our budget is something that impacts taxpayers and residents of Elk River every single day. And I point to our recently constructed public works facility. We were operating out of a facility that was grossly undersized, where literally people were working out of mobile homes before we built this facility, and converted into offices. And so we built this facility, a several million dollar facility, that we then paid sales tax for all of the materials on top of that as well. There's been instances in history where the legislature has rescinded or exempted cities or for sales tax from large projects, the Twin Stadium, North Star. And so it's interesting that we exempt sales tax in these large political projects, but not in day-to-day things like fire halls, public works facilities, and other things that basic services that communities need to do in order to provide basic services off to their residents. So again, on behalf of Representative Anderson, who's not back yet, but Representative Fisher and I, thank you so much for taking time out of your committee to hear our bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas, Representative Fisher, and I apologize for the inconvenience and appreciate your being here, and thank you. Is there any other questions? Representative Anzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just it comes to mind that Representative Runbeck was right on earlier in this hearing when she made reference to the last 5-6 years and the recession and the difficult decisions that have had to be made. But I would submit that one of the real unintended developments has been the connectedness and relationship and trust and intergovernmental relationship between us as the state and the four local units of government has really, really taken a hit. And these bills start the process of maybe healing some of that. And I think if you believe that the state's job is to supervise the delivery of services and the actual delivery of services and the administration of the delivery of services is the responsibility of the local unit of government, then I think we'll look kindly at these bills and bills like these.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no other questions or comments, I will, House File 466 will be held over for possible inclusion at a later date. Members, I would refer House Files 174, 451, 476, and 497 from the Tax Committee to the Property and Local Tax Division. Seeing no other questions or comments, meeting is adjourned.